Welcome, Planned Giving Accelerator members. Welcome to your monthly podcast. I'm quite excited. You know, people say they're excited about something, but they'll say it like, I'm very excited to welcome, very excited to be here. But I am excited to have Gail Perry with us as our podcast guest. Gail Perry is founder and president of the Gail Perry Group, a boutique consulting company that empowers nonprofits in fundraising. They offer bespoke consulting, education, and training for nonprofit professionals. Gail is an internationally respected expert in capital campaigns and major gifts fundraising. She's led or coached over 60 campaigns that have raised hundreds of millions of dollars across the United States. She's author of the book, Fired Up Fundraising, Turn Your Board's Passion into Action. Gail has decades of experience, I hope she doesn't mind me saying that, in fundraising. It's her book that initially brought her to my podcast, Tony Martinetti Nonprofit Radio. She's been a guest on there for a couple of times. And I am genuinely excited to welcome Gail Perry to Planned Giving Accelerator podcast. Hello, yes. Gail.
Hey, well, Tony, I'm genuinely excited to be in touch with you again and to talk fundraising. And we have a fun topic to talk about today. Why you should be fired up about Planned Giving in 2021, right?
Absolutely. We don't want humble asks of any type, but we want confident, out there asks, because everybody has need. You know how important your work is. You know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, Gail. How can you fire us up?
I'm going to start with a story. I was coaching. We have a major gift coaching program we run every year. And one of our coaches is a national organization that is working on curing and researching an important disease. So it's well known. And here I've got the head of the digital and regular fundraising. And I've got the head of program and I've got the major gift team. And it turns out that they only send out appeal letters twice a year. And they're trying. And I looked at them and I said, what are y'all doing? Y'all are trying to cure disease. I've got a niece who has this condition. You need to do something about it, and you need to do it now. You can't be prissy about fundraising. You know, and I think fundraisers second guess themselves. And that goes for planned giving. It goes for all types of asks that people are just too polite. They think fundraising is pushy, but you need to be out there, everybody. You've got rivers and streams that are getting bought by developers and they're going away forever. You've got kids who are hungry. You've got old people who elderly who are also hungry and need help. I mean, the array of work that we do in our nonprofit work is so powerful and so important. And to hold back because you're feeling uncomfortable about fundraising is like you need another job or you need to like wake up. What do you think?
Absolutely. Prissy is another good word. I don't want
another word. Asks.
We don't want humble asks, prissy asks, unconfident asks.
No.
Because you do, you know, the work you're doing, I'm going to take as a given that everybody believes in the work they're doing. Otherwise, they wouldn't have the jobs that they have.
They need to believe passionately and urgently about the work they're doing and not like, oh, well, I guess I'll write a thank you letter today. I think, though, it's easy to get stuck in the business side of fundraising and forget just how urgent this stuff is. I mean, I get urgent emails from political people like crazy, you know, running for office. At the Gazoob and the nonprofit. I was getting, it's so funny, Tony, I was looking at my inbox just this week, and I get all these fundraising emails, and I thought to myself, does any of this really move me? You know, and I was looking for the appeal that moved me emotionally, like, you know, like really got there and called it what it was. And I thought, it's all too formal. So we talk a lot about how giving is an emotional act. And it's almost an intimate act because the donor is saying, you know, I really do believe in this and I want to help. You know, I think we forget as fundraisers, we're all in the business stuff, that we're looking for an emotional connection with the donor. And that goes for planned giving, goes for everything. Because when you can move your donor emotionally, the world opens up. So I would think that might be on our top of our checklist for any appeals and any of our materials that we create, our websites. Is it emotional? Is it full of nonprofit speak and mission statement ease that is too wordy and done by a committee, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I think a lot of times I've been thinking that it all comes down to communication and how we say what we're trying to say and how we present it.
And the folks that we're talking to in planned giving,
yeah,
you know, in some respect, it's already easier because they're already committed, loyal donors. You know, we're not acquiring new donors in planned giving. We're talking to folks who have been supporting the organization for, in many, many, many cases, they've been supporting for decades. They've been giving, maybe at low levels, but that doesn't matter. They've been supporting you for decades.
Right.
So in that respect, you know, you've already got there. You know they're committed and loyal to your mission and your work and your values.
Yeah.
You just got to encourage them to take the next step, and you got to do it confidently. So, all right. So I love your advice about, you know, don't use mission speak. You know, make it plain and emotional, right?
Yeah, hit for the heart. Like, or would you like to leave a gift in your will? You know,
exactly. Well, those are the gifts.
Straightforward. Yeah. Very straightforward. Yeah. Some people don't understand planned giving, as you know. Some people don't understand estate planning, but they know about the idea of a gift in their will. And you know, oh, Tony, during the pandemic, there was this huge uptick in people updating their wills.
Yes.
And my husband and I updated our will. And we added some new nonprofits in there. And so I think even, I'm sure there's still a lot of wills that are pending because of the pandemic. So everybody, you need to be cheerful. Let's talk about the concept of cheerfully aggressive. How about that?
Oh, cheerfully good. Aggressive. Cheerful aggressiveness.
And remember, I'm Southern, I'm polite. I've raised millions of dollars without being pushy. And so there we were, and it was an AFP meeting, Association of Fundraising Professionals in our area in North Carolina. And we were receiving advice from the major foundation leaders of North Carolina. They were up on the dais, you know, these big foundation, big shots. Big philanthropy in North Carolina was speaking to the lowly fundraisers in the audience. And one of these guys said to us, I will never, ever forget this. He said, y'all need to be cheerfully aggressive in promoting your causes to us funders. And then he said, because if you're not promoting your cause, then who's going to do it? If you're not doing it, you're the one who's supposed to be doing this. And if you're not doing it, then who's going to do it? So it's sort of like that old saying, if this to be, it's up to me. Maybe that needs to be the motto for fundraisers right now, that it's okay, everybody, to wear your heart on your sleeve, be emotional, be enthusiastic. I mean, I know you can't be enthusiastic every day, okay? Not like Tony and me. We like turn it on. Oh, I'm so excited.
Gail is better at that than me.
When I was a frontline fundraiser, I had my good days and I had my not so good days. And so my not so good days, I would tend to like do office work. And when I was feeling expansive and cheerfully aggressive, I would muster my energy and I would make those calls to donors, because back then we were doing a lot of donor phone work. So follow your own energy, but be encouraged that the time is right. Tony, I'd like to talk a little bit about the environment for 2021.
Okay.
What do you think? Okay. Because 2021, I mean, first of all, looking at the gifts that came in last year, that the Fundraising Effectiveness Project that from AFP, they track every quarter the trends in giving. Find that giving was up over 10% in 2020. And that's a remarkable jump up, because before, fundraising has been growing, barely keeping up with the national economy expansion.
Yeah, it's growing a couple of percent a year.
Yeah, it was very lackluster. And we were also seeing small donors drift away. And everybody was really worried about the loss of small donors. That trend was strong and solid and consistent over quite a number of years recently. And so last year, the small donors flooded back, and giving went up across the board. They gifts of $1,000 and up went up 10%. I'm trying to remember my data. Gifts of under $250 went up, I think, around 15%. Mm-hmm. So, and you can look this up on FEP, Fundraising Effectiveness Project from AFP. Very strong returns last year. And then there's also a new study out by the Lilly Family School of Philanthropy at Indiana University. You know, that's our big think tank in the U.S. that tracks philanthropy. And they, their projections for the coming year. And there's a quote in that new report that says that I'm paraphrasing here, that donors feel more wealthy when the stock market is going up and that giving follows the economy. And so everybody, the U.S. stock market is at record highs. Guess what? Your donors, even middle of the road or even smaller donors have portfolio. They have like inflated portfolios. They have what they call, what you might call paper profits. They have more money than they used to, and they feel wealthier. I remember in the last recession, like in 2010, there was a story of this donor who was worth $30 million. You know, people's portfolios like dropped dramatically when the stock market crashed. This guy used to be worth $30 million, and now he was only worth $20 million. And he was feeling poor, and so he cut off all of his giving.
Yeah.
And it's all about, you know, that's why I go back to the idea that giving is an emotional act. And so it's all about how the donor feels about their own personal financial situation and how they feel about the donor. I mean, I'm sorry, about the organization that's appealing to them. So I think, yeah. What do you think about the economy right now, Tony?
It's coming back. And as you were talking, I was thinking, you know, giving always comes back. Look, yeah. The stock market always comes back. You know, I don't want to tie it too close to the stock market, but I do agree with you. It depends how people feel about their wealth in terms of what they'll give. Although in planned giving, that's not so much correlated, because as when we're talking about gifts by will, then, you know, that's future giving. There's no lifetime cost to that.
Right. Even easier.
It is. It influences people's sentiments. I'm not saying planned giving is devoid of how people feel about their wealth, but it's less tied than to how they're feeling about their wealth than the outright giving, which is, you know, write a check or transfer stock today.
Right.
The gifts by will are 15, yeah, 20, 25, 30 years from now.
I will say that the Lilly Family School predictions for fundraising in the future for 21 and 2022, they're predicting that planned gifts will, the value of realized planned gifts will go up. Why? Because a lot of the planned gifts come from people's estates and portfolios, and the stock market is at a very strong high. And the economists are predicting continued growth for this year and possibly next. I mean, we're not crystal ball watchers, but we know what we see. So,
that's an argument for, don't you wish your organization had started planned giving so many years ago so that you'd be realizing gifts? You know, in the accelerator, we're just getting the commitments now, and for some time, you know, for decades in the future. But it's still the sustainability of the organization and the work, and what would the community look like if we didn't do our work? Suppose our work stopped. You're on the board of the Charlotte Botanical Garden, right?
North
Carolina Botanical Garden. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What would happen if the garden ceased to exist?
Well, biodiversity. They're tracking biodiversity like crazy. You know, it's a research garden trying to track the plants across the Southeast and disappearing and protecting them. So, and they're also educating gardeners. See, I know all about this. around everywhere about native plants and how important they are for the pollinators and the bees. And so I've got all these native plants in my new house, my garden.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm very passionate about the mission and this work. And remember, I want to make a point, Tony, about your planned giving prospects, everybody. You know, remember Tony was saying that these are longtime givers. I want you to remember also that these people are passionate about your work because they've chosen you to be committed to, and they feel like they are stakeholders and partners with you. All the more reason not to be prissy or not to hold back, because these people like want to know about what's happening because they're that committed and that passionate. And it's part of their personal, like I was talking to my partner, Catherine Gamble, and she and her husband, she revealed to me that she and her husband are making some sizable annual fund, you know, solid five-figure gifts to their two nonprofits, because, and they're one's their church, you know, and the other one is a church-related entity, and they're deeply committed to that, and it's part of who they are as people, you know, and my gardening is like, it's part of who I am as a person, is one of my three top hobbies and things I believe in is the beauty of the plants and agriculture. And so remember that not only are your donors passionate, not only do they feel that they're important stakeholders and partners in your work, but it also is part of their deeply held values in life about what they believe in. Remember, I started off talking about emotion and moving your donor. You know, our donors are like feeling all these feelings, you know, and we're sending this very clinical stuff out. So I want to encourage everybody to be warm and fuzzy with your donors and treat them in your language really is hard to get right. And it really matters that you get it right. And so treat them as they're your friends and not, don't treat them as arm's length. Mm. You know, be friendly, be informal, be transparent, tell them what's happening. We have seen, and I know you probably want to.
I just want to say, and you have something enormous in common. It's your mission. You work for the mission. They support, invest, they're partners in the mission. You have that in common. So it's easy to spark a friendship or maybe professional friendship at least.
Yeah.
You have that work in common.
Yeah.
Both love it. You both love it.
Yeah, one thing we have seen in surveys of donors, both large and small, in the past year is they're responding better to informal, transparent language and transparent about finances. And, you know, I think a lot of nonprofits have had to be transparent about what they're doing, how they're grappling with the situation. So there's been this big shift in nonprofit messaging. And donors have responded. I do think that's one of the reasons, I don't have any data to back it up, is one of the reasons why giving went up. And I want to give you an anecdote, Tony, again, from our Major Gift Coaching Program that we run every year. We had somebody last year from a historic preservation society, okay, in our group in South Carolina. And she was not safety net, you know, in the middle of the pandemic. And she was worried about having to close her doors because they were losing her an income from their properties. And she was really, really worried. I said, okay, here's what you do, Elizabeth. Pull out the names of 20 key supporters and send them a personal note once a month. Just a personal note, letting them know what's going on. Just let them know what's going on, like insiders. And she did this. And you know what happened is that one of these people ups and sends her, this small organization, maybe $300,000 or $400,000 budget, ups and sends her $40,000. And he said, I really like your communications and your transparency. And she didn't even have to ask. Yeah. So I just think that this, I really want to drive home the idea of this informal and transparent language about money is going to be very helpful to you, both in regular fundraising and in planned giving, because, you know, you're talking about your plans for the future. And, you know, the messaging and planned giving is all about the donor's commitment to the cause. And you can talk about that in warm and fuzzy language, right? Instead of formal language.
That's ideal, Gail. Let's leave it there.
Let's leave it there, Tony. That's beautiful. Let's leave it there. Want everybody to be fired up.
Yes, you got to be fired up about your fundraising. That's Gail's book. I recommend it. I've read it. It's what brought me to her years ago. And we've been friends since. Hey, if folks want to learn more about you, your Major Gift fundraising course.
Yeah.
What's the URL? I should know it, but I'm sorry, I don't say it.
GailPerry.com.
GailPerry.com.
And my team, we're growing our team, our consulting team. We're doing capital campaigns all over the country. And our Major Gift coaching program has been running for about 8 years and it gets better every year. And we're really, because Catherine and I stay sort of on the cutting edge of what's happening with donors and in fundraising. So we're able to sort of implement our recommendations with these organizations on the spot. And we're seeing a lot of great results.
Outstanding. GailPerry.com. Thank you very much, Gail. You're terrific.
Thank you, Tony.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Bye.